Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone, and welcome once again to Madam Perry Salon, the podcast that loves you, the podcast that has more celebrities than the latest inauguration, but the one before that, far more celebrities because we deserve it. I am your host, your spiritual advisor, and your groove mistress, Madam Perry, but you can call me Jen, Jennifer, JP Perry. I'm just happy that you're here. And guess what? Everybody has been asking me. In fact, last week on the show, I've had so many fun guests lately. I've had, all my guests, every single guest is fun, but we've had Grammy Award winning saxophonist Dave Koz. We had, we've had Arden Marine, who plays Regina Sinclair on the Netflix show Insatiable. We had a comedian and a film actress, Jackie Monahan. Also, Milton Davis was on the second time not too long ago, but he's really moving up. He's my favorite. He's in the category of Afrofuturism, but he calls some of his new books steampunk, which he knows I'm into, but steam funk, taking it a step further. But anyway, last week we had British band Joe Symes and the Loving Kind, and they were asking me about my BFF, Kenya Colbert. Kenya is riding with me in the genie bottle here tonight. Kenya, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I am so mad that I miss Joe Symes and the Loving Kind. I love them. I miss them on my show as well, actually. So it was good that you had them on. I went back and listened. Unfortunately, I was running errands at the time and couldn't listen in on the show. But well, I love them. So hi, guys.
Too, and I love these guys. But, you know, they're from Liverpool, and they've got that, what they call the Geordie or the Scouser accent there. And sometimes when Colin, the drummer, gets to talking, I can't understand a thing he says. You know, so I have to really, really keep my ear close. He seems to understand me and my accent, but I get lost. Until I met Kenya, he goes, Kenya, where's Kenya? I go, now I understand him. So, yeah.
My Colin.
He adores you. Well, Kenya, people have asked me about you and when you're going to have another podcast and when you're coming back, and everybody thinks that I know everything you're doing, but
well, you almost do. I mean, you're pretty much in the know.
Well, but also reciprocity and keeping your BFF secrets is a valuable thing to do. So,
you better say that twice.
I do. If not, if one of us lets go, there's got to be a chopper waiting outside because somebody's going to be in trouble. But Kenya,
somebody's in trouble.
You got a new podcast coming?
I do. I have one coming soon, but I was really rushing to get it out, and when all of the pandemic, everything from COVID and everything started happening. Because we're all locked in, everybody got a podcast now. Everybody and their grandma got a podcast. And I said, you know what? I like making a big splash in a little pond and not the other way around. So
yeah,
I'm going to hold off a little bit.
All right. And
come back soon. I'm gonna let this just kind of wear on a little bit and just fine tune it even more. But I'm kind of waiting on it to kind of relax a little bit in this field. Everybody's doing it, and everybody's doing such a great job. I want to be right there with them.
We don't have to be in competition because people, you know, can listen to whatever, whenever, you know, wherever with those. So, and there's
right.
Yeah. So,
you're
anyway.
Right. Well, I'm coming back soon, guys. I'm working on it for you. Thank you for asking.
It's going to be special. I know. Well, listen, Kenya, tonight, this is a guest. You know, sometimes people will say to me, how do you get the guests that you get? And it's very flattering. You know, people say, how did you get them? It's like, what's wrong with me? You know, but yeah, I know. I'm a little fish in a big pond. I'm aware of that, you know, but it's like when I get some people like, you know, like Ard Marine, because you were on the show then, and she said, well, you did ask me, so did you want me or not? So it's like, you know, but yeah, and then sometimes people get mad, or they'll say, well, I didn't get so-and-so on there, and I go, well, I've been trying for years, and in fact, tonight's guest is somebody that I've been trying to get on for at least 3 years. I think some of my messages she just really hasn't got, because when she did get one, she answered it right away, so I think the others just kind of went out into... I don't know where things go out there in space, cyberspace. But anyway, I just wanted to say, you know, she's an author that you and I both have read for years, and now she's got a brand new book. She's a publisher. She's a filmmaker. She's everything. You know, I could just keep on talking, but I could just quit yakking and go ahead and bring her on in here with us, because we are so thrilled to have right here in our own special genie bottle, my salon in cyberspace, the magnificent filmmaker, novelist, icon, Tina McElroy Ansah. Tina, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I've been listening to y'all and laughing. I love Friends. Aren't Friends like the best? Wanda and I are so good together. Y'all should have a podcast. Wanda and I just talk, and people just laugh. I mean, just old friends are wonderful. Just
I was going to say before the show started, you know, the time that we should have been going over the rundown and stuff, we were having fun already. And I said, I was about to say to you, you know, I've got to make sure that you feel comfortable and have a good time, because I'm going to want you and Wanda to come back together when Kenya and I are on. And that will end up being just like last week when we had Viv Boucherot on, the artist and musician from England, and her, you know, Kenya came on, and then one of her friends came on, and it was just like a pajama party or something, you know? It was just fun.
That's exactly it will be a hoot. Wanda, as a matter of fact, is listening in. She has just sent me a text saying that, you know, she was getting comfortable. She was just going to listen to me talk, which I do a lot of, I know. Wanda, let me tell you, Wanda and I are so close. You don't know how close we are?
Tell me.
How close are they? We were on a pod. We were on a Zoom watch of the book, as a matter of fact, and we had almost all of the essays there, and SCAD, the Savannah School of Art and Design, and put it together for us, like pass the mic kind of thing, and Wanda and I were there, and I looked down at my phone while we were all talking, and Wanda sent me a text and said, Tina, let somebody else talk.
Only BFF.
That's how we are. Only.
No.
She said, let somebody else talk. And I shut up.
I love that.
And let somebody else talk.
So and she said it with love.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, you know, Wanda said it with love, but Wanda wanted to say it. That's the one. I'll have to tell you. I want to talk to you about all my work, but I really am so excited about the new our new collection, Meeting at the Table, African American Women Write on Race, Culture, and Community. And truly, Wanda and I came up with this on June 12th. I mean, on the phone. We had, you know, 2020 was hard for everybody. You know, I think we need to give a lot of each other, you know, a little break here, just a little break, because it's been very hard on all of us. And I lost my husband in January of last year. And so Wanda lives in Savannah. My baby, 44 years. I mean, just broken, you know. But I wanted to go ahead. I wanted to see the road ahead. And Wanda had been keeping a close eye on me, you know, by telephone because of COVID. You know, we couldn't see each other. I live on St. Simon's Island off the coast of Georgia, and she lives in Savannah, Georgia, right above me. And we were just talking, and Wanda's my go-to, you know, my right hand and my go-to. And she's a no-nonsense, and she gets things done, and, you know. And I'm a little kind of flighty, kind of, you know, you kind of got to pull me back. let me tell you. Let me explain. Wanda, when we met,
Wanda is like my roommate at Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia. And we had never met before. We met, you know, first day in our room. And Wanda was the absolute opposite of me. She liked the windows open. I liked the windows closed. She was in the glee club. I was tone deaf. I mean, I could just go on and on and on. She did her assignments the first night, the day that she got them. I was up playing bid whist all night. And then, you know, she kept her up the night before to the point that she would say, we were both English majors. She would say, Tina, please, you know, come on, come to the library with me. Well, I'm fixing to do this paper. Come on, you got it too. Come on. I said, oh, heck no. You know, I got all week to do that, you know. And I would be up all night for night. But we were just totally different. So, of course, we parted ways as roommates after the first year. But, you know, 50-something years later, you know, here we are. We're both journalists and both writers. But at any rate, Wanda had just published her memoir in February of 2020, and then, of course, COVID had happened, and so I had been like her, you know, her hype woman. You know, I wasn't her editor. I was her hype woman. Come on, Wanda, let's get this book out. Come on, you can do it. No, don't do it that way. Let's go this way. And so I called Wanda to see how she was. Just, you know, regular call. We called every day. I said, hey, how you doing? And she shocked me by saying, I'm not doing real well. And I said, what's up? And she says, I'm tired, I'm depressed, I'm angry, I'm confused. And she went on with this long list. I mean, so un-Wanda-like. And I said, you know, I'm feeling the same things. I'm feeling some of the same things. And it was after, you know, the death of George Floyd on camera. Yes. You know, after killings, after Breonna Taylor, after, I mean, you could just go on. In my neck of the woods, Aubrey, Ahmaud Arbery. I mean, I'm just, you know, you think of that long list, and, you know, it's just been that year. And on top of it, COVID, you know, you were there. I don't have to explain. Y'all were all right there, you know, and you know what was going on. And so we said, you know, Wanda said, you know, well, we're of a certain age. We're not going to get out there and protest, you know, and COVID's out there. And, you know, sometimes as women, we forget how much agency we have. I know it's African-American women. We forget how much agency we have. And so we're talking on the phone. And I said, well, I don't know. You know, we're going to have to do something, you know. And she said, well, maybe we should write something. And I said, well, yeah, we should write. Maybe we can get some other people. And on the phone, we came up with this book. By the end of the conversation, we had the title. We knew that we wanted to be essays. We knew that we wanted to have all African-American women. We knew that we wanted women from, you know, all walks of life. We wanted to just hear their stories, hear what they said and we said. What does it mean to you when we say race, community, and culture?
Yeah,
and so then we had this wonderful conversation, heady stuff of who do you want in the book, and we remembered we had agency. I have a publishing company. I had in the midst of all this, you know. Don't laugh at me. Honestly, I have a publishing company. Wanda had just published, you know, her memoir, and she was doing her own virtual, you know, tour of you know, to keep the word out there, and to, you know, let people know about the book, and, you know, to keep her connected with her readers. And here we are. As Wanda was an editor, you know, for 40 years. She was she's done everything from, you know, USA Today to being the editor of the Montgomery, Alabama Advertiser, the morning newspaper there. And, you know, I've written 5 novels and, no, edited other people. I mean, we forgot we had agents in the midst of all that. What were we in the grip of? Fear and confusion and anger. And, you know, oh, gosh, all those years of anger and years of not speaking and, you know, other people think all that.
Yeah.
And as soon as we came up with this book and the fact that we were going to publish it and we were going to publish it before 2020, I cannot tell you the number of people who told me, Tina, honestly, you know, it takes years to get a collection together. You know you're not going to get this together in, what, 4-6 months? I mean, people who were just, you know, trying to really pull me aside and say, you know, this is a mistake. You're not going to be. But we were determined, and we had no doubt that we were going to do it. I mean, no doubt. It was the most wonderful feeling. If I could feel that about everything in my life, it would be great. We had no doubt that we were going to do it, and we did. You know, then we had a conversation about who do we want, And we picked it, you know. So at any rate, you know, we started we had this conversation on June 12th of 2020. And on October 16th, we had 15 essays in, not all ready to be published, not all corrected, not all edited, but they were in. And on November 3rd, we turned it over to the publisher. And on November 30th, we had a book. We had books in hand.
Oh.
Do not tell me we don't have agency. That was the, you know, that was out of all the lessons that I learned, and I learned a lot of lessons in this past year, the fact that, you know, don't forget your agency. Don't forget what you can do. Don't forget what skills you have. Don't forget what connections you have. You know, don't forget what friends, what favors you've done for people. Oh, I am ashamed of the number of favors I have called in. you use what you got.
You are motivating me right now. I needed to hear you.
That podcast, is that Kenya? you better rethink that podcast, girl.
You got me sitting over here thinking about a lot of things, more than just a podcast. Thank you.
You're so welcome. I'm you know, you used the word, I could just hear you before we went on air, and it's one of my favorite words, Jennifer. You said reciprocity. I don't know what you were talking about. You were talking to somebody else, and you were talking about reciprocity. One of my favorite words, no relationship without reciprocity, Jennifer.
Amen.
No relationship you may know me, or you may, you know, like, all of it. One of the things I think that came up in Wanda and me and the other, all the essayists, in which we have wonderful essayists, brilliant essayists, that came up in was the discussion of reciprocity and the discussion of friendships and relationships, and how I'm now speaking especially now of the cross relationships and the intersectionality of gender and race, you know, white women and black women.
Yes.
And that intersectionality that we have all the time, because, you know, we're out in the world and we're working and all the rest, you know, but how seldom we have relationships, because there is no relationship without reciprocity. I mean, I can't tell you, I'm, you know, I grew up in the South, and I can't tell you how many people, white women, men will tell you, you know, oh gosh, you know, they were raised by a black woman, you know, and they loved her so much, and, you know, she if it hadn't been for her, you know, their mothers were distant, and I mean, all the stories, you know, all the stories that you know that we've heard, black women and white women, you know, over the years, and you know, if you delve a little closer, a little deeper, and you find what was she like? Did she have children? Who were her children? How about, and you find out they know nothing about this woman that they quote unquote love.
Exactly.
They knew each other, but they did not have a relationship. And you hear that all the time for people, women, you know, and this is maybe from another generation, but it still happens, who do talk the same way about the people who take care of them, who take care of their mothers, who take care of their fathers, you know, who raise them, who take care of their children, usually women of color.
You know,
not just
that's
black
one
women,
thing.
But women of color. And there's very rarely relationships there, you know, because there's no reciprocity. Oh, Jennifer, I love that word so much. It's a guiding force for everything that we try to do.
It is. It's an important thing. What I was talking about before when I used it was Kenya and I have reciprocity, as in we don't tell each other secrets. But with what you were just saying, it made me think about a conversation that Kenya and I had probably one of the last times we got to see each other in person. And we were talking about people and grief and different relations, what people expect of people and so forth. And I brought up the film, what's it called? Imitation of Life.
Yes.
And in every version of that, you know, they don't change it very much except whenever it's redone. But, you know, at the very end, after all the years that the woman lived with the family, and took care of the daughters, and took care of the, you know, everything. So as I knew it then, when she got ready to die, they go, what do we do? She goes, I've got to take in friends. I'm in several lodges. I have people at my church. She had a whole life they knew nothing about, and they lived in the same house for decades.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's so interesting that when you mentioned Limitation of Life, is that Jennifer speaking?
Yes.
Yes, that's Jennifer.
Okay, I thought I knew your voices. I'm moved by the fact that you took that from that is what you that was your takeaway from Imitation of Life, because truly is something that people, you know, of course, never, you know, I mean, how many people have looked at that film and seen all black people, white people, all kinds of people, and taken all kinds of things from it. But truly, you know, the fact that they were not seen, you know, talk about being seen. That's all you hear now, because it's important. It's important to be seen.
Well, yeah, and they're just, it's like after, I'm sorry, all these decades of being together, they didn't know she had friends. They didn't know she was in several clubs or had affiliations with church and groups. They knew nothing about her like she was, like she wasn't. They just didn't think of her as a three-dimensional, or as a person with different dimensions and friendships and a life of her own. She just took care of them.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Well, you know, the thing is that there are people like that in all of our lives. I mean, you know, because you aren't supposed to be in everybody's business. You aren't supposed to know everything. But when you claim a relationship,
mm-hmm.
a relationship, then that means something. That calls for something. That doesn't mean, you know, oh, that's the woman who takes care of my mother. You know,
right,
that's
exactly.
That's who you know, want to see. But don't say, this is June, and we love her so much, and we're so grateful
right.
for what she's done. And, you know, we don't know whether she has a car. We don't know how she gets here. Don't know whether she needs transportation. We don't know. Mm-hmm. Oh, we love June so much. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's time for that to be over. We're facing some real stuff. You know, I
exactly.
hate to turn this over. But we had our Capitol marched on, attacked in the last month. Is it last
yes.
month? Last month and a half. Last
yes,
month?
Last month. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know?
You're absolutely right.
I mean,
I know. Like, you know, like for
we've got to do something. You know, and everybody's not going to talk, but we need to start talking. We need to start doing
You're
it and
absolutely
acting.
Right.
And so, as John Lewis said, if you see something, do something.
Do something.
If you see
That's
something,
exactly
say
right.
something. Mm-hmm.
And you have to appreciate people. Like, Jennifer and I, we became friends about 18 years ago? It's so long ago, but
1999.
Not as long as you guys.
Yeah. Not as long as
you
guys.
99. Mm-hmm.
You just have to. I'm not. Even though I'm extremely, I think that I'm extremely friendly. I love people who are open-minded, who are open-hearted, who I don't have to fight to be friends with them, like a relationship, like a marriage.
I almost said good luck.
That don't
I almost
fight
said
me.
Good luck with that, Jennifer, and that's not true. I almost said good luck and fight, you know, but that's not true. That's the fact. We, you know,
looking for
you
what?
Know, young people say game, no game. We need to find, you know, loving folks need to find loving folks.
Right,
yeah.
exactly,
you know,
and you have
open
to.
Open people
yeah.
need to find open people, and people who aren't open have to take a step to be open. They have to take a step to approach. They have to take a step to be open to somebody's, you know, somebody's approach. It takes bravery. It takes real bravery in this world to reach out, and it shouldn't take that, but it does.
Exactly.
And one of the reasons that we published and co-edited Meeting at the Table is just for this, because Wanda has worked for years and years in diversity, especially in the newspaper, in the media, bringing diversity, more diversity into the media in all of her jobs. She's done that. In all of her positions, she's done that.
Yes.
And one of the things that was very important to her about Meeting at the Table was that each essayist not only spoke from her heart and from her story, also in some ways signaled a way out, you know, signaled something they were doing in their lives. So signaled something. And Wanda wrote an essay. And Wanda's essay, she actually talked about ways that she had done things in neighborhoods where she was the only black person of color, the only person, family of color. What she's done in the newsroom. Anika Noni Rose, who is our very own Disney princess.
Yes.
Anika Noni Rose
yes.
is the actress who voiced Tatya in the Princess
Frog. And the Frog.
Princess and the Frog, exactly. Thank
yes.
you. And she's one of our wonderful essayists. And she actually writes about being royalty, as she calls it. And she questions who's seen as royalty and who's not seen as royalty in this country. A wonderful essay. We have all the essays, though, in some way talked about their experience and how they would like to go forward, what they're doing to go forward. So I don't want to call it instructional, but we did ask each essayist, to also give us, some kind of help, for want of a better word, that's in the essay that people know something more. We wanted to enlighten people, but we also wanted to gently guide them. Wanda believes that the audience for our book is going to be mostly white people, white women probably. And, I think it's probably going to be African-American women. So it's interesting. We'll see how it comes down. But it's a book that touches, that I know will touch all women, if you're open
yes.
to it. This is a project, that's just born from, unfortunately, from grief and sadness, but it's very phoenix-like. It's rising
yeah.
from the ashes and trying to trying to guide, take folks with them. So again, we're in big trouble, guys.
Yes.
We are.
But that's okay. That's okay. Listen to us. We're talking. I'm telling you.
Right.
I'm telling you. I'm so hopeful. Even in the midst of this. And it just, hey, this just may be the new book talking, okay? But I'm really hopeful about the future.
Well, 2021 has already, we made some major changes in the government, and it has given so many people a bitter outlook on life that they thought they might not see. I mean, I know a lot of people that were looking to leave the country or was just so distraught over what was going on. So when you have positive leadership, it really encourages people to start thinking more positive and thinking in a way that says that I can do better, I can live better, and I deserve better. So I'm encouraged
as
well.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful.
Yeah, I'm encouraged
right.
as well.
Yeah. I mean, I feel better every time someone says our president, and I look up and there's this smiling gentleman with gray hair
exactly.
on TV. Somebody with a beating heart. Somebody with a bloodstream.
Exactly.
A beating heart. Yeah. So, it is there is room for hope.
Mm-hmm. Let me just have just a moment in here to say that if you're listening to us live tonight, this is February 22nd, 2021. If you're listening to the live show tonight, and of course you can always listen again on Blog Talk Radio, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple, Stitcher, all kinds of places that I don't even know the podcast is on. But you want to know what's funniest when you roll out in the wheelchair when you're rolling out after a colonoscopy and the doctor comes and says, "All right, see you in 3 years, Madam Perry." And he says, I listen to it on Podbean. And then I go, "I'm on Podbean? I didn't know I was on Podbean." But so hey, at least it's we can make all our jokes about that when we have our pajama party show. But if you're listening to Light and you want to talk to, I'm here with Tina McElroy Ansa, and of course, the BFF Supreme. Believe it or not, Tina, would you believe, and if you haven't got one of these already, I'll tell you where to, but I got a coffee mug for Kenya with both of our pictures on it. Well, they're kind
really?
Of like cartoons of us. They're actually illustrations of us.
Oh, even better. Are you kidding?
Oh,
Kenya,
pretty cool.
Wonderful.
Kenya, will you make a picture of that for Tina and send it to her?
Oh, the picture that I have?
of our
the picture on the mug?
Yeah, of us walking.
I will. I will.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
And on the back, it says, I think we're really more than best friends. We're like just a really, really small gang. But anyway, if you're listening tonight, I'm here with best friend extraordinaire Kenya Colbert and also Tina McElroy Ansel. If you want to call in and speak to Tina.
We're all part of a small gang.
A little tiny gang.
Don't forget Wanda. Do not forget Wanda, Jennifer.
Do not.
I was about to say, Wanda.
Definitely part of it.
Yeah, I think you want to be here.
Wanda's listening. Yeah, Wanda's listening. She knows we'll be back.
You got to get this mug for you and Wanda. And your chapter, you and Wanda's chapter of your gang can meet with me and Kenya's chapter anytime. And by the way.
Thank you.
But if you're a Wanda.
But if you're listening live and you want to talk to Tina, the number to call is 646-716-9922. That's a toll-free call in the continental U.S. Blog Talk Radio assures me, but 646-716-9922. If you're in a situation, and you know it happens to all of us, where maybe you're listening, but you can't make a phone call because you're at a job or something, or you've got to be quiet because you're babysitting, whatever, you can always send me, for Tina, a question or a comment through the messenger on Facebook, either as Madam Perry Salon or Jennifer Maudette Perry, and I'll pass it along to her. Now, you know, Tina McElroy's icon. You've done so many things. Filmmaker, novelist. The first book of yours I read, Ugly Ways. There's Baby the Family, The Hand That I Fan With. But this new book of yours, this fresh new book of essays, Meeting at the Table. All the contributors I'm reading in it, there's you, Wanda Lloyd. These are all major writers. You've got,
they're top shelf, aren't they?
Keisha Lance Bottom.
So blessed. The mayor of Atlanta. She is so kind and so, as you can imagine, we had to work around her schedule and, sometimes she would send, parts of things on her phone in between. But she was so committed, after she committed herself to it. And she's a fan of my work. So she's been reading my work, of course, since she was, a teenager. And things were just... have just been lovely stories out of all of them. We have the only female bishop in the AME church, and the AME church bishop, Vashti McKenzie, Murphy McKenzie, who is very well known. She's a wonderful speaker, and we found out, of course, a wonderful writer. We also have Imani Perry, who is a major scholar, and Dolan Perkins Valdez, who is also a wonderful, well known writer and novelist. She wrote the most wonderful book called Wench, WNCH. You have to read it if you have not seen it. We mentioned Anika Noni Rose before, and we also have a Peachy Wimbush Polk, who is the mother of the rapper Wiz Khalifa.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. Y'all were young. I was going to say, it depends on who my audience is when I say that. But she is Peachy Wimbush Polk. She is extraordinary. We found out that, she was a wonderful writer. She's funny. But her essay is the last in the book. And it really, we ordered the book in for the contributors is alphabetical order, because how can you find a hierarchy, or and we also didn't want to have themes, we wanted people to discover the essays as they discovered them, through their wonderful titles. And Peachy Wimbush Polk wrote a wonderful searing essay about her hometown of Pittsburgh and the changes she had seen it go through, and especially through the changes that affected, her hometown of Pittsburgh through the crack epidemic. And, she talks about her, that out of her group of 10 girls who all hung together, the cool girls in high school. You know, she and her best friend were the only ones who escaped, you know, that spiral of drug addiction. And you know, she talks about it. She backs it up, you know, with her research. But she also talks about it as a, you know, a black woman who loves that city and who grew up in a household with four generations of women. You know, her great grandmother, her grandmother, her grandmother herself, and her mother and herself, and how she drew wow. such strength from that, and how she drew such strength from Pittsburgh, and how she, you know, bemoaned the fact that, you know, of what had happened to it, and when she came back. It was and she talks about the way forward, and she talks about our responsibility to the young people. They're just lovely essays. They're essays for our time. They're essays that, you know, I know that are going to get people thinking, and I hope get people mm-hmm. talking. You know, that's the other thing. One of the things that a number of essayists say, including Wanda, is that we've got to reach past that, you know, that place where we've been for the last 20 years, whatever that zone is, you know, that has not included, that's not been as inclusive as it should have been, mm-hmm. as it should be, living right. in America, living in the United States of America. That sounds like a Donna Summer song. Living in the home of the brave. Y'all know that song?
Are you singing it?
Sing it.
Honey. Donna Summers, her husband, her widower, Bruce Sedano's been on here twice, and
really?
I think that man is still in love. He's still in love with her, you know. But Bruce Sedano's been on here twice.
Two words,
but,
Donna Summer. Come on.
Yeah, that's all you need. Mm-hmm. Okay. By the way, we do have somebody calling on the line, but I want to say before we bring them on the line to talk, there's not a clucker in the bunch. You've got not only the mom of Wiz Khalifa, but you've got the daughter of Major Lance.
We do indeed. And, oh my goodness, and one opens the essays and one ends. No, that's not true. Okay, never mind. Yeah, and one ends it. Peachy ends it, and Mayor Bottom, who is the daughter of Major Lance. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is anybody gonna hum his song?
There's a place where the people dance. I don't know where I'm going. Are you ready? Yes, honey. I know Major Lance. You got yours. I got mine. Monkey time.
Oh, my goodness.
I told you.
You know your Major Lance. We're going to have to make sure that Mayor Keisha Lance Robbins gets a copy and gets a link to this.
No.
Oh,
I want her to like
yay.
Me. Don't do that. I want her to like me. Don't do that.
Big old daddy's girl. Big old daddy's girl. Yes. All right.
Right.
She will love you.
I would hope.
Oh, I love it.
Well, let's bring in here.
Okay, please bring in.
She likes what?
Excuse me, Tina, let somebody else talk.
You know what? When you were talking about that Wanda, you know, there have been times when I know Kenya should have turned to me and said, "Will you shut up and let somebody else talk?" But she never has, but she should.
Stop it.
And I do so much for her. And she does so much for me is what I mean. Kenya does so much for me. I'm going, Kenya, let me do something for you. And I was on the phone with her one time, and I said, thank you for doing that. And then my husband goes, when are you ever going to start doing stuff for Kenya? She does everything for you.
Yeah. He does. She does so much, and Tina, it's so ridiculous. She does. As a matter of fact, we have been friends for so long that we share grandchildren. Okay, my grandchildren, we share them.
Oh, yeah.
They call her Abuela.
Yeah. Let me get this in real quick. You've been to WCLK down at Clark University.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
Okay.
Are you talking to me,
all right.
Tina?
Yeah, I've been fundraising for them for over 20 years. They were the first station to ever play my CD. I performed on their live with people, and
really?
They're great people.
So I taught at U decades ago, and one of my first students was the director of WCLK. Do you know Stan Washington?
Yeah.
And the stand with students at Clark AU.
Oh, that's a great place.
I know, small
so
world.
One night, Kenya and I were driving down. We were driving down to WCLK because we were going to be on Reva Blue's show. And she waits until we're almost there, and I'm driving, and she says, "There's something I got to tell you." And it turns out both of her kids, their son and daughter, were going to make her a grandmother at the same time. I mean, at the same, these babies came within a month of each other. And she said,
well, a week of each other.
A week. And she said, and I'm telling you, because I can't do this by myself, so these are now your grandchildren, too. So
exactly.
I haven't even had a baby. Are you sure about this? I don't even know what to do. So, yeah, that's
are
how it is.
Your best
that
friends
sounds,
are, I love
that
the way
sounds,
Kenya started
like
with
us.
Best friends.
We're going to have to have Wanda back. That sounds like us. Wanda has a wonderful, wonderful daughter who is, you know, really brag-worthy. And she's my girl, too, you know. Absolutely we share, you know. You have to watch out for people like me, you know.
Sure.
But African-American women from the South of a certain age who don't have children of their own, we will steal your children. I mean, it's terrible.
Listen, I'm going to bring this caller in right now. But before that, no, I can always tell when something's wrong when Kenya calls me and says, "Do you know what your daughter did?
Oh,
do you know what your son did? I want to talk to you about your son and what he did." I don't know. All right. Welcome to Madame Perry Salon. I am Jennifer J.P. Perry. And please come on in and tell us who you are.
Well, I was about to call and say, "Tina, let somebody else talk." But then Tina said it herself. So this is the mother of Shelby Lloyd.
Hello.
Hey.
Love it.
I'm having so much fun.
And Shelby Lloyd.
And I said, "This is the mother of Shelby Lloyd." And you know this is the mother of Bella, because what is she doing right now? Every time Tina gets on the phone, my dog starts barking.
She's got a lot.
I'm so glad you called.
I had to close the door because as soon as I started talking, Bella started barking. It happens all the time.
Wonderful. Welcome to Madame Perry Salon.
We've been talking about you.
I've been listening, and I just called to say let somebody else talk. We'll get back on there together as BFFs. I want to listen some more. So this is your show. Good night.
I know, Wanda, don't go yet.
No,
Wanda, don't go.
Wanda.
But I'm trying to eat my dinner, my bowl of cereal.
Kenya,
no, you can eat and talk to us.
Wait a minute. Lock the door, Kenya. Shut the door.
I'm locking the door. She can't get out. You're not going to get out, Wanda.
All right. Nope. Sorry. Can't get out. No. Can't do it.
Wanda, can I tell you something?
What's that?
Wanda, it's Kenya. Okay, I was thinking to myself probably about 5 minutes ago. I said, I hope that Wanda calls, and it would be great if she did. And I promise you called. I just cannot believe I have that power to make people call. I feel great.
All right. Well, you know, Tina said women have agency, so you do too.
I was thinking
absolutely.
And it happened.
You have to tell yourself, I did that.
I love that you called. Good job.
Okay. All right. Well, y'all let Tina talk about her books now. She hasn't talked at all about Baby of the Family and Ugly Ways and The Hand I Fan With and You Know Better and Taking After My Dear. I got all five of them on one bookshelf.
I was going to say, look at my girl knowing my book.
I got them all. I know them all. All five signs. They have their own shelf on a bookshelf in my living room. So she needs to talk about that.
I must admit, Place of Honor. Exactly.
Wanda.
As well as some cover art.
Wanda,
I love it.
Sometimes wonder when I don't want the neighbors coming by and making cracks at me when I'm doing some yard work, like, oh, you know, you're crazy, you know, to do this or whatever in the heat. And actually what happened was I started doing more yard work because I would get so upset, you know, in the 4 years leading up to this about what was going on politically. So I just go out and work until the sweat got in my eyes.
All your energy.
Yeah, to get all of that.
Tina needs to tell you about our yard work conversation today.
Well, wait. I got one little thing. So then sometimes, though, I don't want them to say anything. I want to go put some flowers out or that already started, and I go put them out at night. And every time I do that, if it's dark, I think about my dear. I think about my dear.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody thought something was weird with her because she'd be out at night, right?
I thought about her this afternoon because I have a number of tea olives, which smell so wonderful, and they bloom in the wintertime. Little tiny white flowers on a plant, and they're just breathtaking, and they bloom in cold weather. And I was looking at mine, and I said, "Oh my goodness, that plant looks like mud deer." I mean, it has blooms all over. So mud deer, be careful, y'all. Mud deer must be roaming around. For folks who have not read my book, Mudir is a character, a very, very strong character in my second book called Ugly Ways. She's the mother of three really wonderful women. But she insists on being called. She's a woman of a certain age. They're adult girls, adult women now, and there are three of them. And she is the exact opposite. What's the opposite of the epitome? The opposite of what a mother deer is. She insists on her girls calling her mud deer, which is a southern endearment for somebody. It's usually almost like, for your grandmother, that kind of loving.
Yes.
Oh, mud deer, And she is as far from that as she can get. She's the most selfish, self-centered woman in the whole world. She doesn't think the sun rises until she gets out of bed, and she doesn't get out of bed till 3 or 4 in the afternoon. She is completely abdicated all work, all bothers, all everything of her household. She had what the family called the change when they were little girls, and before that, she was a woman. She hadn't finished high school, but she had met a man and thought he was going to be wonderful, and had, she fell in love and had three girls the way she was supposed to, and stayed in the home, and her husband had a steady job, and she didn't have to work in service or clean up other people's houses, and she just had to raise her girls. But she always felt that she wasn't free. Her husband kind of turned on her after they got married, and thought that she was too much for him, and so he had to keep her under his thumb. And she finds out just in the daily routine that she again had agency. She had something happen, and she had some money saved, and there was no money in the house, and the girls were sick, and this is when they were 10, 7, and 5. And the girls were sick, and they needed medicine. And then the electric bill came, and the electricity was about to be cut off. And, Mudir remembered she had some money she had been saving because she was going to run away. And instead of that, she went down and paid that electric bill, something that her husband had held over all their heads, that he was in charge of the household.
Mm-hmm.
And put your hand up with your palm face down, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She did that, and turn your hand over. The whole household flipped over. She said, shoot, I can do this. What else can I do? Papa, on the other hand, is thinking, where did she get money from? Where did Esther get money? And he is baffled by that. And in that one moment, she sees her opportunity that he's unsteady on his feet, not sure of being in charge of the household. And she decides, I'm going to stop doing everything. Let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So she stops making breakfast. Then she stops making dinner. And the girls are, the oldest one is just 10. And she decides, I'm going to sleep all day. I don't even like to get up. She stopped going to the phone. She stopped going to answering the phone. She don't even like her friends. She don't like most of the women she's been talking to. She don't care about them. She sends the girls to the phone to say, my dear's sick. My dear's busy. My dear's in the shower. My dear's anything. And after a while, of course, people stop calling. And then she decides, shit, I'm going to get out of bed. I'm going to sleep all day. No, that's nice. And then she sleeps all day. She gets up and takes a bath and lounges around. She doesn't get dressed. She stays in pajamas and, you know, nightgowns and peignoirs all the time because they're comfortable and they're pretty. And she loves her garden. And so she goes out at night because that's, she's up at night. And she doesn't care what people think about her. Of course, she's the crazy woman in the neighborhood who gardens at night, never comes out, and decided to become a hermit. And her girls, her husband, still have to go out into the world and live. And the girls grow up with this strange woman. They have to go out and face the world on their own, teach themselves how to be women. They have to do everything without a mother. So what does it mean when you're 10, 7, and 5, and you hear your mother say, she's already eaten. When she's had, her whole family is there. The girls are there.
Oh, my God.
Well, what are we going to eat? They grow up with this their whole life. And the novel opens with them coming home to Mulberry. This is the little town. All my books are set in Mulberry, Georgia. It's my own little, not Yakima Potapa County. It's my own little made-up place in my
own
heart,
town.
My head. My own town. Everybody thinks it's Macon, Georgia, where I'm from, but it is not. It is Mulberry. It's the own thing. So it opens with the girls coming back to bury Mud. Yeah, she died suddenly. She told them their whole life that she was going to eat the duck that ate the grass off their graves. But it didn't happen that way. Didn't happen that way. They come home to bury Mudir, but unfortunately, Mudir refuses to be buried. That's ugly ways. It is a wonderful novel, isn't it? It's wonderful when you have enough distance, and I think it takes time to really, look at your work objectively, and really appreciate things that you kind of took for granted. You know, when you did them, you just sort of did it. And then you put it out in the world, and you hear people like you, Jennifer, and you, Kenya, say, I read those. Gosh, those were, those were fundamental in my, when I was 14 years old, when I was 19, when I was, 25. I love when my readers come back and say, oh, Lord, I read the Hannah Family when I was 19. I had no idea. And they said they read, Ugly Ways, when they were younger. They read it again when they were, turned 30. They read it again when they got a divorce.
Exactly.
They read it again when they got remarried.
Yeah.
Literature is important to every culture, but to African American culture, I tell people and remind students and all the time, that, a little over 100 years ago, you, Jennifer, you're white, Jennifer? I've been assuming this all along. Okay, where
no,
you, Jennifer?
I'm so
where,
white, you don't see me on the beach.
For you, Jennifer, to teach Kenya to write. Kenya could be killed, and you, of course, could be ostracized, take your land taken from you, all kinds of things. This is a little over 100 years ago,
Yeah.
And so when I see African-American people publishing and writing, for whether it's for, the Griot or whether it's the New York Times or, one of the 19th or, any of those, you have to take a moment. You have to take a moment and just stop and think about that. I think we move so quickly. I sound like my grandmama, but it's true. We move so quickly that we have gotten away from, so much that we, I'm talking about we African American people have taken for granted, they got us here. All those things, all those sacrifices, and all that love, and all those surprises, all that. And whenever I see, Black folks publish, I can't help but think about that.
Yes.
The wonder of it. I had a friend of my husband's come by. That my husband was at the American Film Institute. His lifelong dream. He was a DP fellow at AFI, and he was invited back for a second year. As a matter of fact, and he was away. So after my first novel, Baby the Family, was published. Janae was in California, and I was here on the East Coast, down in Georgia, by myself, me and the cast. And I got the hard copy of my Baby of the Family, and I said, Zora, just you and me. Mama published the novel. Nobody cares. And I felt so sorry.
Not true.
And this friend, of Janae's came by. They would come by and check on me, Ronnie. And he worked at a pulp mill factory, you know. And he was not a very literate man. And he came by just as the album was the very day that I got the book, and so he shared about the bottle of champagne with me, and he looked at it though. I was in another room, he was on the porch, and he was looking at the book, and when he came back, he looked at me and he hit it. You know how a book sounds when you hit it?
Yes.
And he looked at me and he said, a book. And I said, yeah, Ronnie, a book. You know, I do try to, you know, to approach, as one of my mentors, Jenny Price, taught me, you don't write books for everybody, dear. So everybody's not going to write like your book. But I do try to honor the fact that, you know, we're writing and publishing, and, you know, this is sacred duty stuff, you know, as well as. You're being original and being creative and telling your stories and all of that. You know, I don't want to ever forget, you know, that this is sacred stuff.
I love that you're a great storyteller. I just love the way that you tell the story, like how you get the details in there. Because sometimes people just kind of they tell it, they write a book, but they don't necessarily tell a really good story that makes you want to know what happened next.
Isn't that interesting? You know what? You know
you're
what
able
else?
To do
Everybody
that.
Everybody doesn't read their own stuff well. That surprised me. You know, haven't you been to readings where you thought, oh gosh, it was going to come alive, the author's voice, and it's just not there. I thought everyone would at least read their stuff well. Yes, you're right. Thank you very much for that. You know, I come from a long line of storytellers. I'm one of those little Southern girls who used to sit on the porch and listen to my big daddy tell stories. I am of that age that I know this shock will shock some of your listeners, but I remember when everybody didn't have a television. I remember when, you know, I knew it at our house, a lot of people would come by and look at television because they didn't have televisions, you know. It wasn't that new, but it's just, you know, it wasn't something as ubiquitous as it is now. And I noticed in my household, we lived with my grandfather for a while, that the television was turned off when my big daddy told stories. And so I was one of those kids who sat in front of the television with my bowl of cereal and my orange juice on Saturday morning, looking at the test pattern until TV came on. You know, it wouldn't go up. It wasn't on 24 hours a day.
That's funny.
It had one channel, you know. And I said, my little girl looked just as happy waiting for the cartoons to come on, for the programs to come on during the day. But I noticed that when Big Daddy, my mom, the grandfather told stories, when my auntie Elizabeth told stories, the TV was turned on. And I said, wow, even TV can't compete with Big Daddy's stories. And that's what I knew I wanted to. I knew Baby of the Family. I knew I wanted to be a writer. I knew right then I wanted to tell stories.
And to tell stories
to people that I didn't see in my own reading. As Toni Morrison said, you write the story that you want to read.
I've got a couple of people messaging in some comments and questions for you, Tina. So let me say a couple things real quick. First of all, when you were talking about, you know, at one time it would have been a crime to teach Kenya how to write and so forth. And I was thinking about, I had a guest on last year. You know, I've had a lot of, like I mentioned earlier, Milton Davis. And I had Valjean Jeffers, and she's also sci-fi writer and in the genre of Afrofuturism.
I absolutely. I know Bella.
You know her?
Yes, I do. Yes,
okay.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
You know, word. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So she.
We follow each other.
So when she was on, you know, we were talking about the books and so much because there was seemed to be a proliferation of. That people were sending me, you know, you need to get this author, you need to read this person's work, you need to get them on the show. And I was telling Valjean, I said, you know, it seems to me, and people were talking about this, all of a sudden an emergence of science fiction and fantasy written by Black authors. But you can't tell me, I may not be able to prove it, but you cannot convince me that people color weren't writing this stuff or didn't have the imagination or the storytelling skills to tell this, you know, decades and decades ago. It was just getting
published.
Yeah, getting published. And
also
I think it's speaking of St. Simon's, you know how many years I've gone, I used to go down there and I would think maybe one day I'll see Tina McElroy Elsa in a Barbara Jeans or something, you know, or in the coffee shop or the
yes.
bookstore. Maybe one day I keep my eye out. But I've got somebody here that I want to read his comments, and his name is Clarence Young. He is a writer, and he writes sci-fi, and he goes under the name, his pen name is Zigzag Claiborne. And his latest book,
Claiborne. I love
he's
that.
Fantastic. His latest book, I've got to say the title, I love it. It's a science fiction book, and it is a lively science fiction book. I almost sent it to Kenya, to our granddaughter, and I read it and realized it was a grown-up book, thank goodness. But it's called Afropuffs Are the Antenna of the Universe. And Clarence had, he had, isn't that a great title? Here,
I'm writing it down. It's a wonderful title.
It is. So he's got a couple of comments here, and one is, I'm going to read it all to you and then let you answer. One is, question for Tina, what gives you the most joy when crafting a piece? Is it the tiny sparkling moments along the way or the larger promise of feeling the complicated soul of the story finally come to life? And I'm going to be honest, I sent back, I will, if I can. If I get a space in, I'll ask. And then he said, I'm loving the talk. It's like listening to my aunties when they played cards when I was a kid. And I told them that makes me adore you even
that's
more.
Cute.
To me, that's a compliment.
I love that.
Yes.
Yes, we love that.
Actually, great question. It was a great question because it's difficult to answer. I like the process. I'm a big process person. I teach my students, you know your. I had to learn that today. Where do you write best? You know, where have you gotten your best ideas? Where have you gotten the most productive work done? You know, do you need the lights on? You know, lights low, lights high, music on, music off, noise, all those things that you have to respect your process enough to sort of go weed through and find out the very best process for you. They're all individual. And so part of my process is just what the first part, first part of the question was. I love the marks along the way. I love my perfect day is to write. Let's start with writing. Sit down in the evening and afternoon and start writing and write all through the night and look up and see it's 4 o'clock or 7 o'clock and get in bed and then sleep until you're ready to get up until just daylight and get up and take and get something to eat, go directly to the go directly to the garden. Sinead, my husband's favorite admonition to me was, "Babe, put on some clothes." Because I like to get up and go outside, whatever I have on. I work in the garden, like uninterrupted, until turning compost pile. That's what I did today, turning the compost pile and digging in and doing, heavy work where I sweat and get dirty. And then about 4 or 5 hours later, come in, take a shower, get something to eat, sit down and write, start all over again. write all night, go through. I mean, just my perfect day. I used to have a bunch of those perfect days. I was one of those blessed writers who at one time, you know, was able to support myself and my family, as a matter of fact, with my writing, with only turning in books. And publishing has changed, life has changed, writers' lives have changed. So that's part of my process. And so when I come in, I've been thinking about, when I come in from gardening, I'm thinking about what I wrote the night before and, you know, and where I left off. And sometimes I remember, sometimes I don't. But when I can remember, I head toward the computer or the tablet or whatever I'm on with such anticipation because I knew that I did either good work last night that I'm anxious to look at or I did work that needs lots of, you know, work. I did writing that needs lots of work. And that means that, oh, good, I get to, because I'm one of those people. I was an editor before I was a writer. I love editing. I think the editing is such a wonderful process, and the editor should make your work sparkle. It should make your work better than it is, but it should be better you, not better anybody else. It should be better the writer, you know.
Yeah.
And so I look forward to that. So the points along the way are just wonderful. Oh my goodness, you know, I don't know if anybody's read The Hand I Stand With, but when I came up with the name Herman, I gave myself the day off. I knew that this 100 year old ghost. So his first name was Herman. His first name started with an H. He was Hubert. He was Henry. He was Harry. He was so many things, and I knew that was the fact. What is the name? So he was X in my manuscript, big capital S, FX, whenever I got to his name. And it wasn't, you know, I wasn't deep into my manuscript before. One day I was just thinking, oh, gosh, Herman, Herman. Okay, wait a minute, did I just say Herman? Herman. Oh, my God, his name is Herman. It's Herman. Oh, I was so proud of myself. So it is the stops along the way. And because the question is so wonderful, because the stops along the way for me are the things that are bringing my character to life, which is, you know, which is the other way of, you know, looking forward to, you know, to that point where I have done it when the book is finished. You always should kind of know where you're going, even if you don't end up there. That's what I tell my writing students. You should have a beginning, a middle, and end. And, you know, and if you don't know it, that's okay. But, you know, you should kind of know, you got to have a, you know, heading for that and be free to go anywhere that, you know, the story and your imagination and the spirits or whoever, you know, whatever you believe in contributes to your work, you know, leads you.
Claiborne.
I'm going to look you up. Okay. All right.
He quoted something you said, head with anticipation, and said, in caps, I love that.
Wonderful.
He also said he likes to write, and first he said write in the shower to get rid of the clothes and feed the spirit, but then he said, no, not the shower. I'm thinking, how do you write? What's he got, some kind of magic soap he's going to write with, you know? But then he said, no, not the shower, the bathtub, you know. But then he said, yeah.
Okay.
He was calm, but he did a lot of talking over the weekend. His voice is shot, but he's having a good time. Listen, one day, you know, I've always talked about this. Kenya's heard this a million times. So many people. I've had this fantasy for a while that I get some kind of a tour bus. Not a dumpy one, but a nice one like country western singers have. And and take the show across the country, and some people will get on at one place, whether it's writers, musicians, you know, artists will get off, people will gather, we'll do a show, we'll have it live.
Isn't that a great idea?
It goes somewhere else, and then maybe some people will get off in one city, some people get off in another, on and off, so it might be kind of changing as it goes along, but that is a dream I have, so... Hopefully.
That's a wonderful dream. I cannot tell you how much that part warms my heart. That is the dream that my husband and I had. That is a great idea, you know, to do radio broadcast. I mean, we were thinking of doing radio, kind of like
what's the Garrison Keillor?
Prairie Home Companion.
Prairie Home, like a Prairie Home Companion on the road.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. You got to come to St. Simon's, right?
I love St. Simon's. Yeah.
I know. Well, you'll have to put that on your bus, on your tour.
We'll start. And, you know, Kenya and I are road tested. We've been on several trips together, driving,
you know,
flying.
I can imagine.
So, you know, like you would want to have, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I want to commend you and Wanda for being, I know you're intelligent women. I'm aware of that. But sometimes people you think are intelligent aren't being careful during the COVID crisis and other things too. Like with all the craziness going on, all the cruelty and meanness, but also with the COVID, when you said you haven't, you know, you don't live that far from each other, but you haven't seen each other. And Kenya and I haven't seen each other in almost a year now. The last time we were together, was January of last year, taking our my niece and her little boy, and then mine and Kenya's grandchildren to a movie. And that was the last time we were together in person. And for Christmas, you know, she drove up, dropped off the gifts down the, sent the kids down the driveway with the gifts. Just to drop them off and pick them up out of the back of my husband's car. And then for her birthday last week, happy birthday again, Kenya. You know, I went
and
sent her a message.
Thank
your presence is going to be on the porch. Got to go. Bye. And we talked through the door, but far apart.
Put it on the porch. Have to be safe.
I know. It's been a challenge, hasn't it? It's been a challenge. I remember my last hug.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I'm serious.
Yeah. It was a good one, though. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
It was a good one.
Let me tell you, you're a lucky person when Kenya says, let me give you love. Let me give you some love, or give me love, and gives you a hug.
Yeah.
And I know you and Wanda, you know that. Got it.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. We feel, and this is also, I hope, taught us, you know, that there is a silver thread that connects us all, and that we can connect in different ways. It's taught us a lot of things.
Yes.
It's taught us that nobody's ever going to go on the road again for tours and for other things, you know? It's taught us how to connect, you know, in ways that we didn't appreciate, at least. We haven't before, but didn't appreciate the use as much.
Let me say one more thing.
But humanity will, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so because it's gotten to where, you know, like even my husband now, like if I'm listening to something like a news show, or sometimes I listen to those true crime stories on HLN on a Sirius XM when I'm driving, but if I pull into a drive-thru, I'm thinking if they hear people talking on the radio, will they think that I listen to that, you know, hate radio, that bad, you know, or you know, you don't know what anybody is anymore. People don't know what other white people are thinking anymore. We don't know.
Again, that's why the Capitol attack was such a wake up call. Not as much as it should have been, but a wake up call that, hey, if they are they and they think you are they, they're coming for you.
Yeah,
you know, regardless of the blue uniform, regardless of, you know, the blue uniform and the badge, regardless of all of that, and it's frightening. And you know, it sounds so dramatic, but it's true. You know, I think we're all aware now that we're surrounded by people. Oh wait, I can make it easy. We're surrounded by people who voted for Trump. And that speaks a lot, that there's 77 million. And, you know, and again, we still got to forge, you know, we still have to forge ahead. We still have to forge ahead. And I don't want to be unkind. And I tell you what, I have found myself not being unkind, but withholding kindness.
Right. You have to protect yourself. But
Stephen
King just posted that the other day.
Withholding a smile, you know, withholding a wave back when somebody waves at me. I don't like your look. You know? I mean, that's something I'm proud of, I'm telling you, but I found myself doing that. And you're right.
Right.
It is, you know, you do tell yourself, oh, well, you know, in this climate, one has to la-di-da-di-da, you know. But hopefully, you know, we're going to, I'll come out of this on the other side still being humans with, you know, human feelings, human emotions, and human
I hope so. Also, you can't make any assumptions, and people's feelings are so strong in some areas. I mean, just so, you can't make any assumptions. I was telling Kenya that I was working on the first and second season of Stargirl as a resident, established resident townsperson. And there was a lot of us, you know, in the scenes, walking around that you see, if you've seen the show, walking around the town and stuff. But when we're in our holding area where we eat and read and rest till they call us out, or we, when they have meals served, you know, we all kind of sit there, hang out. Sometimes you talk to people. Sometimes you try to get a nap. But I told Kenya, I said, funny thing is that, and this has happened to me a couple of times, is that someone, like maybe, you know, a black woman comes and sits by me, younger, and we're just talking and getting along fine because we've been working on the scene, we're having a conversation. And then me and my big mouth, I mentioned something about, you know, Trump, and they go, and they just get all stiff and go, well, I think he's a good president. And I'm going, you had to pick the one white person that you thought, and the one black person that's Trump voted for Trump comes and sits by me,
that
thinking
that
I'm
going
to
be
your
buddy.
You had to dig deep to find that Trump, so that black Trump supporter.
Right.
That was
out of all the people here.
But you know what, Jennifer? What I hear in your voice is what I hear in so many of my friends' voices, and white friends, and that is the uncertainty of I'm going to make a mistake. You know, again, within the realms of protecting yourself, you know. So what if you make a mistake? So what? So what if I waved at that person and they didn't wave back at me? You know. I think that's how humanity, you know, slips away about us being, you know, being frightened. But I bet you what? I bet you can't find another Trump supporter in that black Trump supporter in the holding room, in the whole building where you are.
Hey,
so, you know,
I'm not taking any chances.
She found the one. She found the one.
She found her.
Me.
She found me. She came and sat with me, and she was so nice, and we were getting along just great. And there was a time, I remember growing up, there was, as a kid, and even in my young adult days, you could joke with people. You could be on opposite sides politically, and you just make jokes with each other about stuff. You know, like, oh you're those people that so. Yeah, but this is totally different because it means people's lives. It means people's lives, their livelihoods, their money, their health. It means a whole lot more
their
now.
Lives.
By the way, I want to say, too, to something else that Clarence Young, excuse me, Zigzag Claiborne, Afro Puffs of the Antenna of the Universe, he said, I'm over, Tina, are you listening?
Uh-huh.
He says, I'm over here fanboying. Tina's books, when I was younger, wandering through the Barnes & Noble, used to make me feel like people feel about Wakanda now.
Oh, man.
That is so nice. Is that the sweetest?
My
nicest?
Heart is beating in my chest. Boom, boom. Bless your heart. That you know, that touches me, moves me, and makes my day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wakanda,
sweetheart.
Get out of here.
By the way,
you are cool, man.
Speaking.
This is so cool.
Gonna make me be feeling myself and stuff. Okay.
Oh. I am so blessed in the people that I know, and the people I have, so many people in my life that make me just feel just so blessed. Like Becky Kyle that sent Zigzag to me and says, you've got to meet this guy, you've got to have him. Just a lot of people make me feel blessed. They're friends. But speaking of that, that's a good segue in tomorrow night's guest, and Kenya will be here co-hosting again. Tomorrow night's guest is Dr. Sheena C. Howard. And her new book that has came out just this month is Why Wakanda Matters. And it's like a meeting at the table. It's essays from different people about the what Wakanda means culturally, sociologically, in so many different ways. And do you know Sheena Howard? Tina?
I think I do.
I'm sorry. I was thinking you since I've been around a long time. I think I was on a panel with her.
Yeah.
Oh.
What did she write?
Okay, the new book is Why Wakanda Matters, but her other books have had a lot more to do with comics, black comics. Let's see, let me look on her page again.
No, I don't know her because I love black comics. I would remember that.
Comic book artist. She's the first black woman to get an Eisner Award from Disney. And she also wrote a book called The Encyclopedia of Black Comics or Comic Book Writers. So,
I'm sorry, what's her name?
She's Dr. Sheena, S-H-E-E-N-A, middle initial C, last name Howard, like Howard University, where she went.
Okay. I said, you have just got me, I'm a big post-its girl. You got me filling up a post-it. I should have said that was a bigger post-it. I have all sizes. Wanda knows this. This is another difference. Wanda has a little blue book and her computer where she keeps everything. I have post-its all over the wall. I should send you a picture of my post-its. But this is how I edited and organized the book. I have a post-it filled with our schedule, meeting at the table. September 16th, the first essay deadline. September 30th, essays in hand. October 7th, it goes to SCAD for the design. The Savannah College of Art and Design.
Right.
Are you familiar with SCAD?
Oh, yeah. They're also in Atlanta, too.
They're also in Atlanta, exactly. Well, the founder, one of the founders of it, and the president of it now is Paula Wallace, and she's such a good sister. Paula is, you know, big deal. SCAD is a big deal, and you know, she's a big deal. She doesn't make a big deal about it, so she's wonderfully earthy and real and supportive. And when I started my publishing company, Down South Press, which is downsouthpress.com, where you can also order the book, Meeting at the Table, this was in 2007, and I did not know Paula Wallace. You know, I knew of her, but I had not, you know, met her. I had been at SCAD before, but I'd never met her. And I got this phone call and said, "Hi, this is Paula Wallace." So we hear you started a publishing company. Girl, we're proud of you. What can we do for you?
Whoa.
Isn't that just the sweetest thing? They helped design and print, my most recent novel.
Wow.
Taking
that
from Idea. And printed, copies, printed 200, I think they printed 200 bound galleys, which made our company look so good. You know, we couldn't afford bound galleys. Made us look good. So this time, I was so interesting. You forget your agency, ladies. You forget your agency. I was sitting here and we were, maybe in late June, early July. It was early on. And we were, calling in all of our chips. We were talking to all the people we knew. Who could we call to do this? Who could support us here, could support us there? And I have posters all over. And my desk is my great-grandmother's sewing machine. And so I had posters, on the sewing machine. And there was one poster. And I was just sitting here thinking, gosh, we need money. We need support. We need this. And
yes.
I saw a poster, and it said Paula Wallace. I had written it a long time. When we first started thinking of this and had kind of forgotten, I reached out to Paula on Instagram, which is how I got most of my essays. Wanda wrote this beautiful formal letter getting the outlines of what they expected and what she wanted and all that. And I hit mine up on Instagram and Twitter. Again, Wanda. And so Paula, I felt scared. I said, gosh, why wouldn't I reach out to somebody who's been supportive of us? And so I hit her up on Instagram, and that afternoon she hit me back and said, Miss X will be in touch with you to give you whatever you need. They designed the whole interior and the cover, front and back,
of being a potato.
Oh,
so
the whole
thing. They invented fonts for the, you know, for the inside. So that then we passed it over to the final designer, you know, who was able to slip the because we were still working on it. I mean, they designed it. They had to design it with us giving them, okay, this is going to be probably 5 pages. I mean, so they really were very, very, very helpful and very agreeable and very yar. That's my favorite word, yar. Very yar with us. So, that's what I tell my little schoolgirls, all my young women. I said, you know, you need to be yar, you know, in this world. You have to be able to be flexible and move, you know, react quickly when something happens. Mm-hmm. You got to be yar.
Yes.
And every time I do it, you know I'm sitting in my seat doing my shoulders to the side like yar, you know. But Paula, it was just extraordinary. So this book has been very, very blessed, very blessed. You know, the fact that it's out with so much support, and, you know, with these wonderful essays. But Paula, you know, is another one of my sisters. Other than seeing her in the newspaper, did not know what she looked like. Had no idea she knew who I was.
Mhm. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Didn't
matter. The good thing about agency is once you get going, you know how I really am not this old, okay? But I'm thinking of a Model T. I've only seen this in movies, I swear. But you know, it has to be, you know, like pull it. Oh wait! I'll give you a 21st century. No, this is 20th. I'll give you a 20th century example instead of when you're pulling a lawnmower. You know, it's like it almost goes. It just takes a while to sort of get revved up. And once you start doing it, you start attracting more things to yourself, and you know what I mean?
It's
been like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, congratulations on this book. I think it's wonderful. I cannot wait to just get it.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. And you can indeed order it at downsouthpress.com.
Yeah,
if you want more than 3 copies, there's an email address to be in touch with me, and we'll figure it out.
Everyone, because some people listen to the show when they're driving or when they're running or jogging or whatever. A lot of people listen when they're driving. So make sure you know, or remember, that I will have the links to Down South Press and everything where you can get all of Tina McElroy Anza's books, everything you
Thank
need
you
to know, her social media. I will be sharing that not only on all of my Madame Perry Salon social media, but also my personal Jennifer Perry or Jennifer Maudette Perry social media as well. So I'm going to make sure that everybody knows how to find Down South Press and how to get the books. It is an absolute honor. You know, it's always nice. You know how people talk about when you're a fan of somebody for so long and you know, you wonder when you meet them, will they be just as nice? I knew you would be just magnificent.
I knew she would too.
I
follow you on Instagram.
Y'all were just saying that because you know I like to be babied and loved on. Thank you so much. And it is, but Jennifer, isn't it a bummer when it happens the other way? It's like, oh, I wish I had never met you. I wish I just knew you.
Yes.
So I'm pretty much good with everybody's work. You know, I'd like to meet Tina Turner and maybe Michelle Obama. And that's pretty much it. I'm good on everybody else. Your work stands for it. You know, I'd like for your work to stand for it. So, but I am glad that I was all the words I can say, I'm trying not to say, that I was a good egg when you met me. I tell people all the time, you know, if you meet people on book tour, which we don't go on anymore, you know, understand that people are tired and cranky and they probably got a husband at home who doesn't want them to be on book tour and babies and all of that, you know. And you might get them on a bad day. So, you know, usually I try to give, you know, let's give us 2 tries.
Tina, today you posted something about the onions in your pocket. That tickled me when you kept smelling onions everywhere.
I literally was like asking the cats, you know, did you bring in some onions? What is that? And you know how I found out? You know, when you're looking to the left and looking to the right on the floor, I actually brushed my chin against the onions.
Tickle me.
This
has been wonderful. I want us to do this again, Kenya, Wanda, Tina. I want to have the whole gang. I want to have this joy. You guys
we'll have our own meeting at the table.
And of course, we also have our meeting at the table. That's right. And of course, with our our token male, Zigzag Claiborne, with us, we will just
Zigzag.
This has worked with, like, being with his aunties. I think that was a delightful compliment. But just, this has just lifted my soul.
Yeah.
This has delighted my soul.
So we're glad that he picked up on it. We feel
good. Yeah. He's a sweetie.
It has been a pleasure.
We're having a good time, and we're just letting everybody else in on it.
Yeah, and you know what? We're spreading some good love out in the world. There's some negative vibes out there, and there's some good people out there, and with good vibes.
Absolutely.
And so we're just putting out all the goodness that we can right now for that people need to feel it. Some don't even know they need it, but they do. And I think you're one of
the
Kenya.
They needed the words. But
more.
I tell you, I tweeted this morning, and it was the truth. I felt so loved today. This is before just when I got up. You know how sometimes you just feel, I'm a little unfocused, but I felt very loved today. And I tweeted, you would not believe the love I got back. I tell you. You know?
Wow, that is beautiful.
The love you give. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All
it's
right, ladies.
Delightful.
Tomorrow, Kenya's going to be back with Dr. Sheena Howard and me. Tina McElroy, thank you. You are such a marvelous woman. You're not only talented, you're not only gifted, you're not only doing me. We have hardly touched on all the things that you've done and all of your accomplishments. But I hope you had a good enough time to come back, and you and Wanda, and we're going to have it's going to be party all the time. COVID is not going to stop us from having a good time with each other. And
And
Zigzag says, y'all got me smiling so much. This is the kind of joy I live for. I do too. I do too, Zigzag. I really do.
I think this is a joy. I think all our cheeks are going to be sore when we get off the climb.
I just smiling
and grinning and my cheeks are sore.
So I'm going to let everybody go get some sleep now, because I got to have Kenya back here tomorrow. I got to have her well rested, and I can't mistreat. I'll never find another Kenya, so you know I got to be good to her and let her get some rest.
Never find another Kenya,
right?
Yes,
and
it has been such a pleasure.
And
thank you,
Tina.
I bet there's one more thing you would want to have that we have, and that is, even though you try to be good and put good stuff out to other people, if anybody doesn't like your BFF or says anything unkind about them or doesn't treat them well,
you're out of here. There's something seriously hitting wrong with you, and you're telling us before it comes out.
Yes, you don't know. Kenya says I'm sneaky about it, but you don't know.
I love
don't
you guys.
All right. Well, anyway, good night. I love you. I tell you
good
what I'm going to do.
Sweetie.
If
love
you
too.
Want, I'm going to play my song. This is my only song. It was nominated for a Grammy, but of course it, you know, didn't get that far. But anyway, it's called Everybody's Got
Excuse
to Swing.
Me. Wait. Can we stop? Is that it was a Grammy nominated song?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That's where we stop
there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
there
I'll
you
sit,
go. Good girl.
If you give me your address, I'll send you a CD, and if you don't like it, it makes
for
a great
sure.
cat toy or a coaster. But anyway, it's Everybody's Got to Swing. It's my mantra. Okay, I'll send an extra one for them. And I love you all. Be good to each other. Be good to yourself.
Love
Nat and Terry. It's been wonderful. Good night. I love you.
Jump and jive and bop and sing, saying everybody's got to swing.
Lunchbox Jane. Mother Goose.